The Bhagavad Gita, as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 7, Text 13. Tribhir gunamayair bhavair ebhi sarvamidang jagat mohitang na bhijanati mame bhyaf paramavyayam. Lord Krishna says, deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the whole world does not know me who am above the modes and inexhaustible. Purport, the whole world is enchanted by three modes of material nature. Those who are bewildered by these three modes cannot understand that transcendental to the material nature is the Supreme Lord, Krishna. Every living entity under the influence of material nature has a particular type of body and a particular type of psychological and biological activities accordingly. There are four classes of men functioning in the three material modes of nature. Those who are purely in the mode of goodness are called brahmanas. Those who are purely in the mode of passion are called kshatriyas. Those who are in the modes of both passion and ignorance are called the vaishyas. Those who are completely in ignorance are called shudras, and those who are less than that are animals or animal life. However, these designations are not permanent. I may either be a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, or whatever. In any case, this life is temporary. But although life is temporary and we do not know what we are going to be in the next life, by the spell of this illusory energy, we consider ourselves in terms of this bodily conception of life. And we thus think that we are American, Indian, Russian, or Brahmana, Hindu, Muslim, etc. And if we become entangled with the modes of material nature, then we forget the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is behind all these modes. So, Lord Krishna says that living entities, deluded by these three modes of nature, do not understand that behind the material background is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many different kinds of living entities, human beings, demigods, animals, etc. And each and every one of them is under the influence of material nature, and all of them have forgotten the transcendent personality of Godhead. Those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance, and even those who are in the mode of goodness, cannot go beyond the impersonal Brahman conception of the Absolute Truth. They are bewildered before the Supreme Lord in His personal feature, which possesses all beauty, opulence, knowledge, strength, fame, and renunciation. When even those who are in goodness cannot understand, what hope is there for those in passion and ignorance? Krishna consciousness is transcendental to all these three modes of material nature, and those who are truly established in Krishna consciousness are actually liberated. Tribhir gunamayair bhavayair ebhi sarvam idam jagat mohitang nabhijanati mame bhyaf paramavyayam. Deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the whole world does not know me, who am above the modes and inexhaustible. Om Agyanatimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Shreshtam Manamapi Shatiputram Atrasvarupam Rupam Tasyagrajam Urupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto yasya prathita kripaya shri gurum tam natosmi. Vandeham shri guru shri atav parakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana raghunatanvitam tam sajivam sadvaitam sabadhutam parijana sahitam krishna chaitanya devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha. Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, herein states that everyone who does not know Krishna is in illusion. In other words, that everyone pretty much in this world is a fool, which he will directly state just a few verses up, that namang duskritino murha, two verses up, namang duskritino murha prapadyante naratamaha maya paritagyana asurang bhavamashritaha. Krishna says that persons who do not surrender to me are all sinful. They are in the categories of murha, ass-like, foolish people, naradhama, the lowest among mankind, maya parita jnana, who are apparently very well educated, cultured, sophisticated, but although they superficially know a lot, they don't really know anything because they don't know Krishna. And those who are just out and out demoniac in rejecting Krishna. So everyone is deluded, Lord Krishna says here, by the three modes of material nature. Thus we find that there are many ideas in the world, many belief systems, dogmas, world views, but all are wrong. Only one is right. The one that which is correct is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and everything is subordinate to Him, everyone is subordinate to Him, all living beings are His eternal parts and parcels and His servants. Now, many people that think that their worldview is correct, pretty much everyone does, one cannot operate as a human being, one cannot live as a human being without having some kind of worldview, even if it's not articulated or thought out as a philosophy. Not everyone's a philosopher, but in one sense everyone is, because everyone has some reason for doing what they're doing, even if they don't know that they have a reason. But they, if you ask them, well, why do you go to work? And they'll say, well, that's a stupid question, because I have to earn money and to live. So even though they don't think about it specifically, they presume themselves to be the body, and that it is required to go to work to maintain the body, and maintaining the body is, that's it, that's the goal of life. So there are various delusions. Everyone is deluded according to the three modes of material nature. Those who are in the mode of ignorance, their outlook is that just neglect, avoid activities, be lazy, just somehow drag oneself through life. Or another aspect of the mode of ignorance is very black magic or satanic practices, or deliberately doing harm to others, taking pleasure in others' pain. In the mode of passion, people are very active for getting newer and newer things. This whole idea of the progress of the human race and development. We speak of the developed countries and the developing countries. This whole idea that we should develop and improve the human situation is all, it all springs from the mode of passion, from the idea that we as humans can improve our situation and make the world a better place by our endeavors. And it's very deeply ingrained in the consciousness in the Western world. People think that you have to get ahead, make progress, become a success, and that's also all that's being exported all over the world, so that in India, among the large middle class, it's considered that one has to become a success, which is measured in terms of one's educational qualification and earning money. So this is all delusions of the mode of passion. That you see, America is such a great country because every city has so many big buildings. It's developed. But this is all in the mode of passion, because there's what is the actual benefit there? In the mode of goodness, it's a different outlook altogether. That the idea that that real development and real progress is not by rearranging matter in various forms, mining various minerals and processing them and rearranging them as buildings, motorbikes, bridges, electrical appliances, but that in the mode of goodness, the understanding that real development is development in spiritual understanding. But even that is a delusion, or gives rise to delusion, if one does not surrender to Krishna. If one is spiritual but doesn't understand the Supreme Spirit is Krishna, the Supreme Controller, then one is also in delusion. So everyone in this world is in delusion, and the only actual path is Krishna consciousness. Now, we may think this sounds like some kind of fundamentalism. You know, everyone's going around saying, well, you know, if you don't bathe in the blood of Jesus, for instance, whatever that means, I'm not exactly sure what it means, it doesn't sound very pleasant. What do you have to do? You have to stick a spear in the side and get some blood out. So you have to bathe yourself in the blood of Jesus, and the Lord is coming soon. He was expected on May the 21st, but he missed the bus or something. Didn't quite make it, but took a wrong turning. But never mind, he's coming soon, and you better get ready. So it may sound like fundamentalism to say that this is the only way, but this is not fundamentalism. We should be able to understand, if we are at all sober and clear thinking, not very common qualities, because we're in the world of delusion. But if we are actually, as Srila Prabhupada, he translates that verse, what is that verse? I'm not remembering now. But in the English he says that if one is actually sober and philosophically inclined, he uses these terms, one should be able to understand that there is actual reality, there is an actual proper understanding of things as they are. It's not that, well, you can believe anything you like and it's all the same. That's one common theory in the one theory that's common in the world today, that, well, you just believe whatever you like and everyone can believe whatever they like and it all comes to the same thing in the end. But that's not a fact. It's not that it all comes to the same thing in the end. Well, in one sense it does, because this fan, can we turn that off?
It's air conditioning.
It's air conditioning. We can't do anything about it, except turn it down, maybe. All right. In one sense, all beliefs are the same. They all lead to the same goal, or they all lead to the same end. All beliefs in this world, they all do lead to the same end. That's true. They all lead to repeated birth and death. So the popular saying, jato mot toto pot, which is sometimes translated as all paths lead to the same goal, in one sense that's true. In the sense that if we don't know what the real path is, then we simply, all paths will simply lead us to repeated birth in this world, as Krishna will state in the 9th chapter. Ashadadhana purusha dharmasyasya parantapa aprapya mang nivartante mrityu samsara vartmani. That if one does not have faith in, one does not develop understanding of the actual path or the proper path, then whatever path one accepts will not lead one to Krishna, who is the actual ultimate reality, but one will simply traverse the path of repeated birth and death. So, it's a philosophical cop-out for lazy people who don't really want to think about things too much, that to think that all the paths are the same and it's all relative and there's no one actual path. There's no any ultimate reality. It's also a philosophical cop-out to accept a fundamentalist outlook and without any reason or understanding just to say that, yes, this is it, that Jesus is the only way or Islam is the only way or whatever. Without, you just have to believe it. Without any particular intelligent basis, just say, well, we believe it because it's in the Bible. But why do you believe it because it's in the Bible? Why? Why should you believe something because it's in the Bible? Why not in the Quran? Or someone may say, well, I believe it because it's in the Bible, and we just have to accept it. But then someone else will come along and say, and also say, I believe it because it's in the Bible, but have a very different outlook altogether. Or someone will say, I believe in the what is that? The Church of Latter-day Saints, the Book of Mormon. But why? Why should you believe in this or that? And then they just have to come to say, well, Jesus spoke to me within my heart. And it's simply on the platform of blind faith. And in these supposedly religious paths, that blind faith is considered a virtue, but it can't help one to come to, the blind faith is considered a virtue. You just should just believe, but it can't help one to actually ascertain what is the nature of reality. How would you know? I mean, if you want to know, if you're actually serious to know what is actual reality and what is delusion, and someone comes along and says, well, you have to blindly believe in the Bible according to the way we interpret. I mean, if it's not just one interpretation, there's so many different interpretations. And then someone will say, no, you have to believe in the Quran, and someone will say, you have to believe in the Book of Mormon, but just blindly. But there's a difference here in Bhagavad Gita, in which Krishna presents a philosophical understanding which appeals to the intelligence. And actually Krishna does address the intelligence of Arjuna, who he speaks Bhagavad Gita to. He doesn't just say, just believe in me, but he presents with all reasoning the science of spiritual knowledge, starting off by explaining that just see Arjuna, you can see young children. Arjuna at that time was an elderly man, still a very powerful warrior, but quite old. So you've seen children, and yourself, you were a child. Then you were a young man, then you were a middle-aged man, now you're somewhat elderly. So the body is always changing, the mind is always changing, but the person stays the same, which indicates that the person is separate from the body, is separate from the mind. The person is a that is different from the material elements which compose the body and the mind. Therefore, it is intelligent to consider that the person is a different kind of entity to the material elements that make up the body. Therefore, it's intelligent to accept that when the body dies, the person doesn't die, because the person was never the body anyway. The person is different from the body. So in this way, Krishna, he presents intelligently. He shows Arjuna, just see what is the misery of this world. Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, dukkha. Everyone can see that this material world is miserable. There is birth, death, old age and disease. One should find a solution to these problems. Krishna doesn't present Bhagavad Gita, initially he doesn't present it as a theistic work, in the sense that, well, it's just been presented so that you should believe in God. The whole concept of just believing in God is not there. The concept is rather that one should come to the platform of knowledge, in which complete and perfect knowledge is to understand oneself as different from the body, different from matter, and to understand that there is a supreme controller who is also different from this material world. He's not bound by the laws of this material world, and that controller is Krishna. So in this way, Krishna presents Krishna consciousness, this movement of which this temple is a constituent part, is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So this is the ancient science. Ancient means, actually it's eternal, but from the temporal perspective it is ancient. It's the eternal science of knowing the relation of the soul with the Supreme Soul, who is called Krishna, is a person. Not just some amorphous entity with no name and no being, this idea that the Supreme is simply some light. That is another delusion. So many ideas in the world. I don't know about now, because I didn't, you know, I'm not a regular TV watcher, but as a kid sometimes I used to see on TV, the TV company, they will go out in the street and just ask people, well, what do you think about this or that? Or they still do that, I guess, is it? They just go and ask people on the street, what do you think about this issue, this, that? So everyone's supposed to give their opinion. But on what basis should people give their opinion? People should know about an issue. They should, before they proffer an opinion on something, one should know what are the issues involved. So people, they may base their whole life on a theory of theism, or some beliefs, what they call a belief system, or someone else may be an atheist, or someone may be just not interested in these things at all. In most of Europe, that seems to be the main attitude toward religion. In America, religion still, it's a big issue. But in Europe, in many parts of Europe, religion's just, it's just not an issue at all. I mean, I know myself, even though I was sent to a superficially Catholic school myself, and almost all the students going to the school and the teachers had no interest in or regard for religion at all. It was just a formality that it was called a Catholic school. It was just, religion just wasn't an issue. It was just something we never thought about or discussed, and it's just not there practically. So, but that's also that ignoring religion is also that's also a one kind of worldview. I mean, it's not even agnosticism. The culture I was raised in, it was more like a total apathy toward any important questions at all in the world. It's just presumed by everyone that, well, you know, you live, and I guess they don't think, well, sometime you have to die also. So just mindless thinking. So mindlessness, either pious, somewhat pious, religious mindlessness of thinking that, well, we just believe and we must be right because we feel it in our heart. There's a problem with this feeling something in your heart because someone else feels something completely opposite and different in their heart. Someone feels in their heart that, I have to kill for my religion. So the person who's about to, they're going to kill feels in their heart a completely different religious idea. So therefore, all this can be understood to be various grades of illusion: pious mindlessness, impious mindlessness, all different grades of delusion. Therefore, Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita to give us actual knowledge of reality. Yeah, this if we are actually intelligent. Yeah, that's the word. Yes, if one is actually intelligent and philosophically inclined, then one should understand that although there are so many ideas in the world, and it may seem just like a complete jumble and confusion, and some people say, well, no one can actually know. They're quite convinced that no one can know what is actual reality. But they're so convinced that no one can know what is the actual truth. And then others are convinced, yes, I know. But beyond all this jumble of various delusions and ignorance, Krishna gives factual knowledge in Bhagavad Gita. Now we may say again, that's just some kind of fundamentalism. But it is, Srila Prabhupada always presented this as the as science of God consciousness. And Krishna himself presents that as the science of knowing one's own position and one's relation with the Supreme. So there are science means there are certain verifiable facts. Unless we're completely skeptical about everything, someone can doubt everything. There was some philosopher in America some time ago who his philosophy became quite popular. He promoted that, well, we should doubt everything. That's actually one of the principles of the so-called scientific method. You should doubt everything. So he promoted, don't believe anything. And then his philosophy became quite popular until he announced that, well, I doubt my own philosophy. But actually you can't live like that. You can't live in doubt all the time. You couldn't eat anything. If you doubt that the food is actual food, maybe it's just some, maybe this bread in front of me is actually a piece of plastic. It's a plastic imitation bread. Or maybe someone poisoned it. Or maybe the laws of the universe or the laws of biology change so that if I eat this bread, even though it's perfectly good bread, it will poison me. Of course, bread or any food nowadays, it does poison us because it's all full of poison. But some more quickly acting poison. Most food just slowly puts the poison into you and then you get cancer or something later on. But there are more quickly acting poisons also. Anyway, we can't live on a platform of doubt. We couldn't walk. We couldn't put one foot down if we thought, well, maybe that's not really solid. Maybe it's just an illusion, and it's someone's made some artificial flaw there, which if I put my foot in, it'll fall through. I mean, it sounds stupid, doesn't it? But the point is that we don't live in doubt all the time. We accept that there is reality at some level. But then, as Krishna points out here in Bhagavad Gita, the reality that we accept, by accepting this world as reality, then we are trapped in the reality of birth, death, old age and disease. That's real. Krishna gives us the method by which we can become free from that. So, an intelligent person should understand that although there may be many, many, many theories, something must be right. Some understanding must be correct. It's not that everything is all wrong, or there's no actual platform of reality. That is called Shunyavad, when everything is rejected and everything is just becomes a big skeptical zero. But there is reality, and that is revealed in the Vedic scriptures. This appeals to a person who is actually intelligent and philosophically inclined, that reality is Satyam Shivam Sundaram. Actual reality is real in all phases. The word that Krishna repeatedly uses to describe himself in Bhagavad Gita, as in this verse which I've read today, is avyayam, which means that he doesn't decline. That which is actually real, it is not subject to destruction in the form of time. There are many aspects of this supreme reality. Siddha nirastu kuhakam. He's always beyond. Krishna is always beyond the kshaya, that deteriorating effect of time. Krishna is always beyond that. He's always beyond illusion. He is the ultimate substantive reality on which this whole illusory world is operating in forgetfulness of Him. Everything is related to Krishna. This material world appears to be real, but what appears to be real, it's unreal in the sense that it doesn't last. Just like Srila Prabhupada writes here in the purport, that everyone thinks, I'm an American or I'm an Indian, wave the flag. But what is this America? It's an entity, it's a phenomenon that has been imagined for less than 300 years. Right? The land was here previously. How old is this country? 200 and something years? Right, so it's less than 300 years. So this land was here previously, but no one was going around thinking, America, God bless America. It's the whole idea of America is something that's been dreamed up less than 300 years ago. And it won't last, because everything in this world is subject to change. And even if it does last, not only is everything subject to change, but even this world itself won't last. This whole planet won't last forever. The whole universe won't last forever. But even if we think America is so great, well, we're not going to stay here. We're not. Every one of us sitting in this room, if we come back in 100 years, maybe this building will be here. We hope so. But we all won't be here. We all have to get out of the situation we have. There are so many millionaires living in this affluent city of Dallas, but that's all an illusion, thinking I'm a millionaire, because it's momentary. Flick your fingers. According to Einstein's relativity theory, if you flick your fingers on a planet which is further away from the sun, then the moment, one moment is longer than a moment on this planet. So that's described in the Vedic literature, that there is Lord Brahma, who's the topmost, on the topmost planet of this universe. And in his planet, one moment of time is thousands and thousands of years on this planet. But even he has to die. So, what is the nature of this world? Why take it so seriously? Is there not something beyond all this? Yes, that is Satyam. That is the Param Satyam. Krishna, who is inexhaustible. There is the world of reality beyond this ridiculous drama of ourselves taking us. We all take ourselves so very, very seriously as we jump around in different bodies for a short time. We all think we're very, very important. I'm very important. The dog on the street also. Of course, you don't have street dogs here. In India, there are literally millions of them. They also think they're very important. Everyone. The ant also thinks I'm a very important ant. Of course, he doesn't have a very developed intelligence, as far as we understand, but within his own capacity, he takes very seriously what he's doing. But it's all meaningless. So what is meaningful? That is Satyam, who happens to be Krishna. Shivam, God is good. God is good. Not so indisposed towards those who neglect him that he will burn them forever. He's a better person than that. He is actually a well-wisher. So he is all good. And if we approach him with an honest consciousness of wanting to serve him, then Krishna will very kindly accept him. So Satyam, Shivam, and God is very beautiful. This we should make known to the pious people of America who believe in God. He's very beautiful. Just see how beautiful these paintings. I was told that these paintings here in this temple were evaluated as having a value together of approximately $800,000. That's quite a lot of money. But Krishna is more valuable than any millions of dollars. Krishna's beauty is Kandarpa Koti Kamaniya Vishesha Shobham. His specific beauty is more attractive than that of millions and millions of gods of love. In this world, we don't see, therefore we may not believe, but there is a God of love who is very attractive to people of this world. But the love in this material world, like everything else in this material world, simply ends in everything gets put on the conveyor belt that inexorably marches toward birth, death, old age and disease. It's all temporary. Whatever love we have. I love America. I love my dog. We love so many. I love tea and biscuits, or coffee and biscuits, or coffee and cookies, whatever. In England it's tea and biscuits. I was born in England. So we love so many things, but it's all on a roller coaster heading for a crash. But Krishna is the transcendental God of love. Means he's not affected by time. It doesn't end in bitterness and suffering, as love in this world inevitably does. But is always increasing. Krishna's beauty is always increasing. His love is always increasing. There's nothing bad or undesirable there. Everything is totally desirable and totally satisfying. So this is the great science of Krishna consciousness, to understand reality, understanding that everything else is a delusion, and therefore one of the duties of the members of the Krishna Conscious Movement is to point out to the people of the world that everything here is a delusion. Reality is not of this world. Reality is not of a plane in which there is repeated birth and death with struggle and suffering, but we are meant for happy life. And all other things, trying to be happy in this world, on the terms of this world, it's simply a delusion. So many varieties of delusion. So devotees of Krishna, they should not be victimized by these delusions. That's the symptom of a self-realized person. He's not victimized by the various delusions of this world. He sees initially with the eye of Shastra, of Vedic knowledge, by which he can understand that all these different theories, all this mindset that we are programmed into in school and by the mass media and by the whole culture, that life in this world is meant for enjoyment and God bless America, and so many different ideas, whatever they may be. If we examine all the philosophies and ideas and theories of this world, we'll find them all to be lacking. But Krishna consciousness that is fully adequate in all respects to satisfy every single person. Now we may say, well, this sounds like fundamentalism, but then examine and see that we see Srila Prabhupada, the foremost propagator, or practically the only propagator of Krishna consciousness in the Western world. Later others came, but there's actually no comparison to Srila Prabhupada. He was aggressive in promoting Krishna consciousness. He challenged. Why? Because he wanted others to understand that they're simply living in delusion. So he challenged the wrong ideas. The wrong ideas, for instance, that man or life has arisen from matter. He challenged this wrong idea. He exposed the shallowness of people who say they believe in God, but they don't really know anything about Him. He would say, if you don't know who you speak of God, but you don't know, all right, I know. I'll tell you. Why don't you accept it? The various wrong ideas that the ultimate spiritual reality is some light that we all have to merge into. Srila Prabhupada would challenge these and expose the inadequacies of these common misconceptions. So devotees should be aware of the reality, which is Krishna consciousness, the actual understanding of the philosophy of life as presented in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and not be deluded by the myriad delusions which this world presents. Okay, and then much, much more, of course, could be said about all this. But I'll finish there, unless anyone has any questions. Yes. Yeah, there's a question.
Is in the heavenly planets, given the demigods are under the control of the material world, the 3 modes of nature, I would like to know what modes in particular are they under, even ignorance?
Are the demigods under ignorance? Generally, it's stated that the demigods are in the mode of goodness. Although there seems to be a strong admixture of the enjoying, to enjoy this material world, but they, but their enjoyment, it's on a different platform, inasmuch as they also drink something which is not exactly wine, but they take some kind of intoxication which doesn't have bad side effects. And they enjoy sexual activities, which is certainly in the mode of passion. But overall, they're said to be in the mode of goodness, because they don't. The bad side effects of the mode of passion are not seen there. They'll eat food cooked in ghee. The kind of music they listen to is not this not in passion or ignorance. So generally, that's the demigods are said to be in the mode of passion. Although all the modes of nature, everywhere in this world, all the modes of nature are present. So the influence of ignorance will be there also. In the heavenly planets. Yeah. Yeah, you have a question? Okay. All right, next the microphone can come here.
Very strong microphone, sorry. Let's see if we can hold it back a little bit here. Very much enjoyed your teaching, sir, especially as it regards the world views and the idea that it really is important. It does make a difference what world view that one holds. It would also seem that following that train of thought, it would be very—it's very necessary that we not mischaracterize a particular worldview. So I just want to make sure that I understood you correctly. Were you advocating that Christianity advocates a type of circular reasoning, blind faith type of belief? And the reason I'm asking is there seem to be scriptures that would contradict that, such as 1 Thessalonians 5:21, that says, "Prove all things, hold fast to that which is good," which the emphasis, of course, there will be on prove all things.
Prove
all things. Which would go against the idea of a blind faith.
Yeah, it would do, but unfortunately, much of what we see in all religious systems in the world is that mostly people don't, it's an unexamined faith. Most people do not go very deeply or try to understand very deeply. So this blind faith, which is definitely, at least from what I can observe, in many strands of Christianity, this it's just promoted, you should believe. So, what we want to promote, and we don't even say you just believe this, but look, examine and see. If we look, examine and see, if we're actually intelligent, we should accept that there is a supreme controller, that there is God. Then we should find where is the developed knowledge of God and of how to approach Him. If we intelligently accept that there is a supreme controller, then it's also intelligent to accept that the very fact that we have intelligence and the proclivity to try to understand God or to approach God suggest that He also has a means to communicate with us. So that means is in the form of various scriptures which are revealed in various times and places and circumstances in the world, and persons who present those scriptures. But there may be different levels of understanding also. So let us examine and see. Blind faith is not good. It's not a strong platform. One can easily be misled into either just sentimentalism or fanaticism like that. Yeah.
I agree with you fully. It sounds like maybe your bone of contention might be with some of the ones who have some of the practices rather than the actual teachings of the old individual.
Exactly. Yeah.
We're in agreement there. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Who was that? Freud said religion is a crutch. It's a psychological crutch. Well, for many people it is. But here in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna exhorts Arjuna to understand. He repeatedly asks him, have you understood? Have you understood? Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, so it seems that our position, the position of every living entity, we're trying to move forward towards knowledge, starts from the empirical platform.
Yeah, well, the search for truth begins with the discontent with one's present position.
But even when it comes to, we have...
Excuse me. There may be various levels, just like in the Vedic culture. There are people who, without examining their existential position, they as Krishna says here in Bhagavad Gita, the Veda Vada Ratha, they simply follow some religious rituals without really thinking about it. So the platform of spiritual inquiry begins Atato Brahma Jignasa, when one inquires, what is the actual nature of spiritual reality? One may be following religious rituals within the Vedic system, but one is simply religious. One hasn't really thought. When one starts to see the nature of the temporality and the suffering of this world, then he's a candidate for inquiring into the nature of spiritual reality. Yeah.
Before I actually present my question, I have to see that we agree on certain premises.
Yeah.
So if
I was just correcting my.
Observation. So the premise that we start off, that we start from the empirical platform, would that be correct? After all, you said philosophical.
Well, it may be. You see, there are some people who may start off with just examining philosophically or just seeing what's going on in this world. But there may be other people also who start off in the Vedic culture. And they accept the Vedas. They come from, they're coming from a different platform.
Why do they accept the Vedas?
It may be just because they're born in that culture.
Okay, but wouldn't that be a blind faith?
Yeah.
So that's the platform we should reject.
Yes, and Krishna rejects it in Bhagavad Gita.
So the premise that we start off from the empirical position would be correct. In other words, I observe, I have experience of this world, and I interpret it in philosophical and intelligent ways. So my position is always, I start off from the empirical point.
Yeah, we start off from the, our own observation is there. Observation of ourselves as distinct entities.
And from this position, it is very clear that there has to be metaphysical reality, because if everything's reduced down to physical reality, it just absolutely makes no sense.
Yeah.
But now when we have come to the metaphysical point, our journey took us to that point, to metaphysical point. I mean, how do we discern what's the nature of metaphysical reality? Are we again left with our empirical quest and tools? Or should we really go and try out every single so-called metaphysical process before we find one that's consistent?
What is not, of course, it's not possible to find out every single process. If one tries to examine philosophically so many things, there will come a point which it doesn't take very. If one is sincerely trying to seek out the nature of reality, it doesn't take very long before one comes to the point of confusion and understanding that you're not going anywhere. You're like a dog chasing its own tail. You can't, how far you can go with your own mind and intelligence, it's very limited. And at that time, if one has the inclination to, or one can discern or intuit that there is a greater power beyond me that is my well-wisher, then one will pray to that person, even though one may not know who that is, and the grace of God will descend in the form of a person of this world who can guide one through this jungle of various ideas that's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Brahmanda Brahmite Kono Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Abhij. That one receives a guide on the path who one can intimately trust by perceiving his character, and that what he teaches actually helps one to progress. Now, there may be various gurus, I'm speaking about guru, one who can guide us, teacher who can guide us through this. But there may be various teachers also at various levels of realization. So it may be that one progresses, but then again finds discontent. And it may go on even for many lifetimes like this.
So even at that point, one's again left to deal with
empirical. Yeah, ultimately it's experiential. Ultimately it's experiential. Everything is, even knowledge. In the, I suppose it's another modern Western or that the body of thought which has evolved in the Western world separates or attempts to separate knowledge or what's supposed to be science from experience, objectivity from subjectivity. But in the Vedic tradition, the two are not. There's no attempt to totally disassociate them. In the Vedic metaphysical, what we would call metaphysical tradition. At the same time, we have to understand that we are not the arbiters of reality. We are tiny living beings, and there is a supreme being. So ultimately, that depends on the descent of His grace. And as long as we are apathetic toward that Supreme Being, we may, by simply trying to cultivate knowledge or spiritual experiences by doing meditation or yoga or simply analyzing the world, our path of progress will be very slow and very difficult, and although we may attain some level of realization, that will never truly satisfy us. That verse is there, what is that? Klesho dhikataraste sham avyakta sakta chetasam. What's the next line?
Avyakta
higati dukam dehavadbhiravapyate. That persons who try to make spiritual progress avoiding the reality of the personality of Godhead, the supreme controller, all beautiful, all loving, all kind, by avoiding Him, then we simply we go through many, many difficulties. And if we simply accept that, yes, I am a servant of Krishna, so let me serve Him, then immediately our path becomes very clear, because that is the correct path. So, anything else? All right, so thank you very much. Yeah, all right.
Thank you. in the purple, you see there that those are that understand Krishna than more ignorant.
Sorry?
Those that understand Krishna, they are more of ignorance.
Yeah.
So, if some of you really understand Krishna and sincerely accept,
our situation is, as much as we accept Krishna, we are freed from illusion. As much as we don't accept Krishna, we are influenced by illusion, which is all of, we say three modes of material nature, but all are on the basis of ignorance. So the mode of ignorance is the basis in this material world. Therefore, in the next verse, Krishna says, the very important verse, Daivi hi esha gunamai mama maya durate amam eva ye prapadyante maya metam tarantite. This whole world is the world of illusion. So it's very difficult for us to get free from that. Just like if you're in the ocean, it's everywhere there's, you're just swimming, and then where are you going to go? There's only water. If you want to get out of the water, how are you going to get out of the water? Because there's only water. But if we surrender to Krishna, then we can very easily cross over this ocean of ignorance. Krishna will come and pick us up out of the ocean. Otherwise, by our own effort, how are we ever going to swim? We can't swim across an ocean. So like that, we're tiny living beings in a vast ocean of ignorance. But Krishna can lift us out. By our own effort, it's very difficult. Effort is required. We have to show Krishna that we're serious. But ultimately we're dependent on Krishna's mercy. Hare Krishna. So thank you all for coming. Hare Krishna. Yes, thank you. Yes, we should be inquisitive. This is the human life without this, without the quest to understand God. It's a wasted life. Even ritual, formal religion, we should think, use the intelligence that God has given us. Think means in the way that He guides us to understand. Right? Hare Krishna. 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 Krishna.